So we begin with theater a little bit earlier than usual because we have a lot to cover today, including the Gonzaga University's theater department is doing a play called Mr. Burns, a Post-Apocalyptic Play. Charlie Pepitone, the director, is probably the perpetrator of this whole thing. So, Charlie, come in here and describe how would you introduce this play?
Well, Mr. Burns, a Post-Electric Play is...
That's right, Post-Electric. Well,
post-electric.
Electric Apocalyptic.
We get close to the apocalypse play. That makes good sense. Anne Washburn wrote it, premiered in 2013. It's a really contemporary play by one of America's leading new playwrights. So we're excited to be producing this show. Our technical director actually worked on the original production in New York. So she brought it to us. And it all happens just after the fall of the power grid. A nuclear meltdown has taken out the power grid. And we meet in Act One, a group of travelers who gather around a campfire, and they do what everybody does at times of crisis around a campfire. They start trying to remember times of the past, times of before. And so in this sense, they're remembering The Simpsons, and they're remembering the Cape Fear episode, and they get it mixed up with Scorsese's Cape Fear and the 1960s Cape Fear. And it's just layers and layers and layers of pop culture. And ultimately, that's what the play is all about, is what is it in times of crisis, what is it that holds us together? And perhaps a scary option, what if it's our stories? What if it's our pop culture? That's what's left to hold us together.
Well, the other side of that is everybody happily says our stories hold us together.
Yeah,
so it's
absolutely.
Just that, I guess what in a way you're saying is does our pop culture deserve to be the quality of stories that hold us together?
Well, that's the question. We've got such a fractured society that perhaps the only common unifying mythology that we've got left is what we amuse ourselves mm-hmm. with. And that's sort of where the play goes. It really leans into the times. Act Two takes place 7 years after these people meet. The group of people have become an amateur theatrical society, surviving now in the Oklahoma territories by performing episodes of The Simpsons and performing commercials talking about products that no longer exist, but just trying to give people a sense of the past. Act Three takes place 75 years after that, so roughly three generations after the fall. And it's essentially a passion play, of the time before, using the lens of Mr. Burns, The Simpsons, and the Cape Fear episode to tell the story of how the society fell.
We presume there's a high degree of knowing of The Simpsons among you, the listener, but Mr. Burns is the very capitalistic and immoral owner of the nuclear power plant.
Right.
In case you didn't happen to know that, let's go to our studio where three singers and a pianist are assembled, and they're about to do a piece called The Call Came on the Radio.
Just can't get there fast enough. Smoke whipping through the air, make me gasp and stuff. Where the towers were are two pillars of light. And I hear the screams in the lit up night. And I stop in my tracks just like Lot's wife.
Ken, you're breaking up. Ken, you're breaking. Ken, you're breaking.
The darkness blooms with a radiant bright. I know in my soul this is the crazy life. Upside, inside, out, I see you through the smoke. The sky is devil red. You reach for me, but I broke. The world is made of flames. I twist and turn and choke. This is the Vida Loca. We are living the Vida Loca. No one thought to flee. No, no one knew to flee. Remember, remember.
Part of the call that came in on the call came on the radio. That's the text there. Charlie Pepitone, the director. And here that was performed by the pianist Nathan Patrick Nelson and the three singers, Annika Perez Krikorian, Mitchell Gomes, and Daniel Martin in the studio. So is this song happen fairly early in the play?
So this opens in Act 3. So,
oh, it is.
At this point, this is the opening of the Passion Play, which is sort of a ceremony of remembrance of the society that fell. And this is how that act opens. So okay. 75 years after the fall, and they're all gathering to remember, as the song says.
Okay, well, let's meet the people, because I think implicit in my introduction is going to tell a lot, because Nathan, who is playing the piano, has the role of Matt and Scratchy. And again, we're going to hope that people know Simpson's characters for the
which is
of this.
Important. But what's nice is I think I'd seen two Simpsons episodes before I started working on the show. It's definitely not a prerequisite.
Okay, and then Annika Perez Krikorian, Quincy and Bart. That's a very coveted role, I'm sure. Mitchell Gomes as Gibson and Mr. Burns. That's Daniel Martin as Sam, and another coveted role of Homer. So let's just come in here on a moment. Can I assume that you all deeply know The Simpsons? Is that...
No.
Really?
I had never seen an episode of The Simpsons before I got cast
in
this show.
This is exciting. Well, then let's stay with you, Annika, for just a minute. Maybe move a little closer to the microphone. And so now that you've done the show, have you done some Saturday night makeup, or have you checked out a Simpsons episode?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously watched the Cape Fear episode, which is what this show is based on, and... with some other cast members, we watched some other various Simpsons episodes, especially from the early seasons. But it's interesting because I always sort of let go of The Simpsons before I even tried it. I was like, oh, it's The Simpsons, you know, it's the dumb show that's been on for 15 million years, and it's not important. But I think actually watching it gave me a better appreciation of why it's important, even though it is still an irreverent and not necessarily cerebral show.
Well, we'll find out from the others about that. And Charlie, my wise crack on the side for people that fear liberal education to think that watching Simpsons is a requirement of of getting their degree.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we think of it as leaning into culture.
Okay, so now who wants to defend The Simpsons as deep philosophy and important part
I'll
of our civilization?
Of, yeah.
This is Daniel, who plays Homer and Sam.
Yes, sir. Well, I grew up with The Simpsons. I've been watching it ever since I was 11 or 12. And then as I sort of became an adult, I started to research The Simpsons and follow it from, you know, when it started to shake the grounds of pop culture in the 90s, early 90s. And I loved it every step of the way. I loved how The Simpsons really gave no Fs, so to speak. And it really just pushed the boundaries for the time. And it's still funny. It's still a very funny show. It may be, you know, we can talk all day about its cultural, you know, the cultural institution that it created and you know, whatever boundaries it pushed, but it's still a very fun, watchable show for people today. And that's why, you know, even it was kind of past my time when I was growing up, I fell in love with it. I fell in love with it. So when this show came along, I immediately jumped on the opportunity, knowing a lot about The Simpsons and having a history with The Simpsons. So it just kind of felt like it felt like a smooth fit to me.
You know, Charlie, there's a lovely double entendre here, since The Simpsons does so many episodes which are parodies of something. Well, as you say, the very Cape Fear episode, and then when now the issue of The Simpsons is a parody for telling stories.
I think that's what Anne Washburn's up to. Apparently, when they started working on this show in New York, they started with Seinfeld, then they moved to Friends. That didn't work. They found The Simpsons worked because the play is all about echoes and reverberations and the misremembrances and the way that our stories change through time. So it's about parody. Mm-hmm. And so there are layers of pop culture. You probably heard it in that call came on the radio. We hear bits of Ricky Martin, bits of Eminem. All these popular cultural references layer on top of each other with... the echo of Scorsese and Robert Mitchum and all of these things. So essentially it's about the way our stories change and the way that our faulty memory shapes the future in a way.
Yeah, it was interesting in rehearsals.
Yeah, and this is Nathan, who is scratchy as his Simpsons character.
Yeah, just like talking about that with the layers that there's so many layers that we've spent weeks and weeks and weeks on this, and then even just within this last tech week, finding things and being like, oh, I think she's actually making a reference in this one line that we just didn't even realize, and she's making references to The Simpsons, which is making references to Cape Fear, while Anne Washburn's also making references to Cape Fear and making references. We make references in gesture, in a certain body language to Cape Fear, to The Simpsons episode itself. And it's kind of interesting because as we've gone along, we've discovered so many layers to this play and so many references that are hidden in it. And that is like exactly like you said, the Simpsons episodes themselves do that in ways where you can notice a background character that is a reference to someone. So it's a really nuanced, complex show in that way.
And the name of the play is Mr. Burns. So Mr. Burns, you better somehow defend yourself or place yourself. How come they come to either microphone? How come they got to name it after you?
In the third act of the play, Mr. Burns, in the Cape Fear episode, Sideshow Bob is the main villain, and somehow throughout time, as people have told the story, as they've acted it out, as
Sideshow Bob, who's a failed comedian,
okay. Yes, yeah. Played by Kelsey Grammer, this villain role is somehow translated into Mr. Burns, who really is not in the Cape Fear episode at all. But it is one of those things, one of those faulty memories that people have of it, and somehow he is projected into this storyline, into this scenario, based on the context of everything that's going on, especially with the nuclear meltdowns. That's somehow people relate him to that because he is the owner of the power plant. That's where he
Well, yeah, that's the ultimate villainy, because if there's suddenly no electricity in this future,
gotta find someone to blame
in this future world, and he's spent 25 years of Simpsons shows setting himself up to be the blamed one.
Exactly.
We had a Mexican mask maker and performer on campus this last couple of weeks named Felipe Horta. And I was talking with him yesterday, and he made a remark about every good passion play or every good dance that he works on in Mexico has to have a good devil. Well, that's the same in ours. Mm-hmm. And so Mr. Burns he's the devil figure that everybody's pushing against.
Yeah, so this third act, 75 years later, and the sense that you say it is a passion play, do you want to get any deeper in that? How much can you reveal of how these characters fit into that?
So, essentially, that last act is sort of a ceremony for this culture. It takes place after this great violence that happens in the society. It's funny. It's really darkly, savagely funny throughout, and it's done in the style of passion plays that you would see in our culture today.
So where we're remembering. There's the equivalent of a crucifixion.
There's an equivalent of a death and resurrection. There's a sense of how are we holding this society together, how will we go on? And so that's sort of what the whole point of Act Three is. Okay, we've come through this time of trial, how do we then move on?
I've also related it to things like Greek tragedy and Shakespearean plays that we do now, because I think, especially with Shakespeare, the translation from his time to our time, Shakespeare, I feel like, was essentially pop culture. His works were not always his own. They were popular stories. They were popular characters that he then translated and put into modern language with modern, you know, modern references so that people would understand them and relate to them. And so I think as much as, you know, people do laugh a little bit about a passion play about The Simpsons, that's what I think the third act is. It's what we've taken of Greek tragedy and of Shakespeare, and, you know, we've elevated them to these high academic levels when in a lot of cases they were modern popular consumption pieces. So I think that that's something that I really connected with, is that you know, grounding this as much as it's a funny, it's funny to be playing Bart Simpson. it's in that vein, which is very interesting.
Annika Perez Krikorian, who plays Bart Simpson, among, and then briefly, Matt Quincy Gibson and Sam, where do those non-Simpsons names fit into this whole show?
So these are the names of the travelers who find each other in Act One, and then in Act Two we meet Quincy. He's not in Act One. 7 years later, when they've all decided, well, the way that we're going to go on is we're going to sell the society's memories back to them in the form of community theater, essentially, is what they're doing. And so,
so yet another level.
Yeah, there's these layers and layers of it. So that's who they are. And then there's a big surprise at the end of Act Two that then moves us forward three generations.
And now, by the way, Charlie Pepitone was just talking, and then four of the actors.
There's a cast of nine.
Okay, so four of the actors who are in this play, which is Mr. Burns, a post-electric play, and it opens Thursday night, tomorrow night, 10th, 11th, 12th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30, Sunday matinee at 2, and then the same the following week. I want to take just a moment and kind of give you each, can give your 30-second stump speech on how doing drama at Gonzaga fits in with the rest of your life. Are you majoring? Are you minoring? Is it something you do on the side? Somebody start in on that. This is Nathan.
Yeah, I'm a theater and education major at Gonzaga, so I plan on spending the rest of my life in a theater of some kind, preferably acting and also teaching and using my skills there, and especially with my Catholic background and Jesuit background, using that as a... so cliche in the Jesuit school, but a way of proceeding through through theater and through educating people. I just think it's immeasurable, valuably.
Thank you, Nathan. Who's next? Mitchell.
So I'm not a theater major or a minor, but I've participated in drama since I was in high school. I'm actually a creative writing major, and
well, that's close enough.
Yeah, close enough. Exactly. And I just think writing something and then actually partaking in an artist's work, I think those inform each other very well, and they influence each other so much so that, I don't know, I think playing both sides of that really gives me a rounded education in creating something, whether it's interpreting lines or... writing dialogue. I think it just works. I think it works both ways. And you know, there's parts of theater that you can't get with writing. You know, writing, you're it's very much more not, I don't want to say secluded or isolated, but it's very much
internal.
Yes, that's the word. And while it is collaborative, there is something about collaboration on the stage that you can't get in collaboration writing. So I think it just fills a gap there.
Good. Mitchell Gomes, who's next? Okay, Annika. Sorry, Annika.
Okay. Well, I am a theater major with a public relations minor. Because I've been doing theater since I was five. I've been doing it for a very long time. And I think it's mostly because what propels our culture is story at its basis. And I think that that's what interests me the most is, you know, how do we keep telling stories? Why do we keep telling stories? Why do we keep needing theater? Why do we keep needing all these different forms of entertainment? And so I'm really invested in continuing that culture of live theater, of human connection. And with PR, I would like to distribute that to the world. And because I think that theater is something that deserves to be protected. And I want to do that any way I can. So that's why I'm excited about this play. And that's why I love being a theater major.
Nice integration. Good. Thanks, Annika. And then Daniel.
Yeah, so I'm like Mitch. I'm not a theater major. I'm a journalism major. But I have also been performing since I was 11, 12 years old. So I've been performing for a very long time. And the way that it fits into my life at GU is just kind of like anything else. You go to class, you live your life during the day, but, you know, you're spending You're spending a lot of hours every night, you know, collaborating and working towards what Annika said. You're working towards a story. And it's a unique sensation being up on stage, and I think all of us in this room live off that high. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes you mess up, sometimes you zig when you should have zagged, and you miss a cue, but you keep rolling. And once you finally pull it together, it's its own reward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that was Daniel Martin. Well, why don't you head out into the other room? We're going to get another song. And this was three of the folks from this play that opens tomorrow night at Gonzaga. And it is Mr. Burns, a post-election play. Charlie, Say Goodbye is that the name of the song?
Yeah, Say Goodbye. This takes place right at the end, near the end of Act Three, when we've gone through all the trials of the culture. We've pulled ourselves through the memory, and then Bart steps up and has nearly a final say.
Okay, so this the singer will be Annika in the role of Bart as we go back to the studio.
I stand on the deck. I don't feel the boat sway. My heart's already gone. My soul's already slipped away. This is my final hour in the heart of a storm. No peace in my heart, nothing warm. This is the moment when I say goodbye. The whole world and I, the whole world and I. And I keep my cool and I do not cry. I only want to say goodbye to everything. It's the end of everything. The woods are ablaze, lightning cracks in the sky, smoke full of ashes and thunder on high. And I'm wet with the rain, I'm drenched with my tears. I've been alive for what feels like 100 years. This is the moment when I say goodbye. This is my final lullaby. Everyone I love has gone. I'll have joined them by the dawn. Yes, I'll have vanished by the...
And that's where the song is left, vanished by the Say Goodbye song from this play, Mr. Burns, a post-electric play. And we were hearing singing it, Annika Perez-Krikorian, who is also playing the ukulele, and her backup band of Mitchell Gomes and Daniel Martin. Charlie Pepitone, thanks a lot for bringing these amazing kids in.
Yeah, our students at Gonzaga are so reflective, and they see the power of story and the power of entertainment. That's ultimately what this play is about, through the lens of The Simpsons and this screwball dark comedy. But it's about the fact that we are, in a sense, the stories we tell about ourselves. And so if that's the artist's job, to be in this particular situations and time, and then decide what can we do to pull culture together. And so we find ourselves in an interesting time to do a show like this. And mm-hmm. so it's a comedy, but it's also serving, I think, what good art does, and that is to be a place to work out our differences and to try to sort out what story is it. What do we want to say about ourselves?
So something we need to do, there's a good opportunity to do it. That's opening tomorrow night, running for 2 weeks at Gonzaga. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.